This episode is sponsored by Audible. Get a free audiobook of your choice that you get to keep with their free trial. You can learn more at lutherancartographer.com/audible. The Lutheran Cartographer, episode 62. Welcome to the Lutheran Cartographer, the podcast where we explore what it's like to be Lutheran in different places. I'm your host, Nicholas Weber. Today we are going to Pagosa Springs, Colorado, to talk to Pastor Andrew Packer. He is the pastor of Our Savior Lutheran Church and School. Pastor Packer, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Help orient our listeners geographically. Where exactly is Pagosa Springs?
Pagosa Springs is in the Four Corners region of the United States, so that part of the world where those four states, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah all come together. We are a couple hours from the Four Corners, but we're still part of that region. So a lot of people know where Durango is because it has a very famous train. We are an hour east of Durango.
I see. So where is it in relation to Denver?
We are, depending on which way you go, we're about 5.5 hours south of Denver. We are on the other side of the Rocky Mountains. We're on the western slope. Denver's on the other side, so the eastern slope, the eastern part of the state. So we have to cross the Rocky Mountains to get up to Denver, no matter which way we go. It's about 5 to 5.5 hours, depending on where you go in Denver. So not real close. Colorado's a big state.
Yeah, definitely. So is Denver the closest major metropolitan area?
Yeah, Albuquerque, if going outside the state, Albuquerque is only 3.5 hours away. So if you want a large city, you could go to Albuquerque. Colorado Springs has become fairly large as it's ever inching towards Denver. And it's only 4.5 hours away. But Denver is definitely the largest city that's close to us in that respect. Albuquerque is not nearly as big as Denver.
I see. So tell us a little bit more about yourself, your background, and where you've been before.
I've kind of lived all over the United States, actually. So I grew up in Pennsylvania, in Du Bois, Pennsylvania, which is in the western part of the state. And then I moved to Arizona when I was 12. Then I went to college in Northern California. I went to a Presbyterian seminary for a little while in Greenville, South Carolina. Then we moved to Nevada. And then after Nevada, I went to seminary in Fort Wayne, did my vicarage in Illinois, back to Fort Wayne, and then now here in Colorado. So had a chance to live in various parts of the country.
All right, good deal. Well, let's get back to the geographical and place questions in just a bit, but I'm curious, how did you go from Presbyterianism to Lutheranism?
Yeah, I'll give you the short version. It's kind of a long story, but while I was in seminary, I began having questions about some of the doctrines that Presbyterians believe, including things like double predestination, limited atonement. I was struggling with a review of baptism and the Lord's Supper. And when I had to drop out of seminary because of a bad car accident, that's why we moved to Nevada. So when I was in Nevada, there wasn't a Presbyterian church for us to go to, not a good one that I would consider going to. So we were going to a Reformed Baptist church at the time, and I was really looking into things and struggling and wrestling with scripture and figuring out what I believed. And at one point, I got in a long discussion with the Reformed Baptist pastor about baptism, and I was basically a Lutheran at that time on baptism, and I didn't know it yet because I didn't know what Lutherans believed. And he told me my views on baptism were dangerous. And so I had a good buddy from college had become an LCMS pastor. We both had gone to a Christian Missionary Alliance college in Redding, California, Simpson University, at the time, Simpson College. And he was a pastor in Florida at the time, and we started communicating, and I said, I'm going to check out the LCMS church in town. And he had visited me a year before, talked with me for a long time, left my house and told his wife, he's a Lutheran and he doesn't know it yet. He'll be a Lutheran within a year or two. So when I emailed him to say, hey, I'm going to check out the LCMS church, he was like laughing hysterically on the inside and like, yeah, you should do that. So I went checked out the LCMS church, figured if I'm going to go here, I should figure out what they believe. Started reading the Book of Concord. For some reason, probably just divine providence, I started with a formula which addresses Calvinist issues. I finished reading the formula and told my wife, man, I think I'm actually a Lutheran. And from there, it's the rest, you know, as they say, is history. So there's a short version, but that's how I got there. So then my pastors at that church said, you need to go to seminary. And some other friends did. And so I went to Fort Wayne, and that's how I ended up here. So
fantastic. Let's turn back to the geographical question as we think about moving around from place to place. How would you contrast the places that you've been with Pagosa Springs?
Pagosa is unique in a lot of ways. I mean, this is by far the highest elevation I've lived at. My house is at 7,500 feet. That's, you know, Redding, where I went to college, is at like 300 feet above sea level. So, you know, that already is quite different. Being in the Rocky Mountains, I mean, we get more snow. I always tell people, though, it's weird because, so we get a lot of snow, but as opposed to Pennsylvania or Indiana, where I've lived, I don't find the winters that cold generally. If the sun's out, I can shovel snow in a t-shirt. Even if it says 25 degrees, it feels warmer because we're closer to the sun. I rarely feel cold during the winter unless it's a cloudy, overcast day, or sometimes we get a little bit of an Arctic chill, but not very often. It's generally beautiful here year round. It's a great place to be outdoors. People come here to be in the outdoors. If you don't like the outdoors, do not come to Pagosa Springs, because that's mostly what we have to offer you is outdoor things. But if you love the outdoors, in summer, winter, we've got things year round to enjoy outside. So
that is great. So you've started to talk about the outdoors. Say a little bit more about that, and also highlight for our listeners, what are some of the other great things about being in Pagosa Springs?
Well, some things to do here is we're called Pagosa Springs because we have, they boast of having the world's deepest hot springs. And so a lot of people come here for the hot springs, to go to the hot springs resorts and hang out in the various natural hot pools. They redirect the water and control the temperature. So you've got, you know, water that, in my opinion, will kind of boil your flesh off, and some water that's more for sitting and relaxing in. But that's very popular here. There's just hundreds and hundreds of hiking trails. I mean, I will never get to them all. Even as my family, we love to go hiking. We love to be outdoors, but there are just so many. And then you like to go back to ones you found and liked the year before. There's hiking. There's river rafting during certain parts of the year. Of course, there's skiing and snowshoeing and snowmobiling. Also during this, hunting's huge here, especially in the fall. That's one of our biggest tourist attractions. We are a resort town. And so people come here to do things outside, whether it's hunting during hunting season, or whether it's all the various hiking and river things you can do during that time of the year, or whether we're 45 minutes from Wolf Creek Ski Resort. And so a lot of people come here and go skiing during the ski months. Like right now, we have the most snow in Colorado up at our ski resort, which is usually true most years. And so we have just tons of outdoor stuff. I mean, you name it. If it involves outdoor things, you can do it here in Pagosa. My kids love mountain biking. Both of them have been on the mountain bike team here in the area before. My wife and I enjoy that as well. There's just anything outdoor that you can think of here. There's a time of year we can go do it, which is really wonderful.
Yeah, that is great. What are some of the challenges about the area?
I mean, the biggest challenge right now, I'd say for most people, just in kind of generally, the cost of living here is quite high compared to what jobs pay. So, I mean, there's a lot of families in this town where if you don't run your own business, there's a good chance you may be working two jobs to make ends meet here. That can be quite difficult. So it's right now the housing market's insane. It's insane in the whole state of Colorado. And we're actually, compared to a lot of Colorado, really not that bad, but it's crazy. Like a house, trying to help my brother find a house right now. He has a job offer down here, trying to see if he can make it work. A house just went on the market a few hours ago at $275,000, which is really, really cheap for our area right now. and it was gone within a few hours. It was already under contract. So if something comes out in that price range, it's snatched up within minutes. Most houses right now are between the 400 to 500 range, which is out of a lot of people's budget, quite frankly. So that's one, I'd say, difficulty of the area is just cost of living compared to what jobs in a resort town pay doesn't really line up extremely well. And part of that is we have about 60% of the homes here are owned by people who own their home here as a second or third home. It's just a vacation spot for them. My neighbors who live across the street from me, they come up once or twice a year. They built this beautiful, massive home, and it's their hunting lodge. Like, they're never in it. It's empty 99% of the year. They come up a couple times a year to hunt, and I've never met them because they're gone all day. I see the light on, and I know they're there, but they're gone all day. They get back late at night from hunting, and they take out early in the morning, and then they're gone for most of the year. So that's one big challenge in the area. And in many ways, I think that's the biggest challenge just for everyone here is that issue. It's a perennial problem. There's no rentals available. You cannot find a long-term rental. Everyone makes more money on short-term rentals, Airbnb type stuff. And so it makes it hard for people who want to come here and be a part of like our church and school, for example. It makes it hard to get here because if you didn't sell your house like in California or someplace else for a lot of money, it's good chance you can't find something here. And so that's been a little frustrating for us. Even trying to get teachers here to our school, things like that, it can create issues for us. So that's probably one of the biggest issues. I mean, the second one, more specifically related to church issues, is because we live in a resort town where we're near all this outdoor stuff, you live in a community of people who love to be outdoors on the weekends, right? I mean, that's why they live here. And so they can go boating or hiking or skiing. And a lot of times it means on the weekends, which makes it sometimes difficult to convince people that, hey, church Sunday morning is more important than anything else. You should be here before you go do that stuff. But a lot of people live here because they want to be gone every weekend. They want to be out on the river, out on the lake. They want to be up in the mountains. They don't want to be in town going to church necessarily. And that's not as much an issue, I wouldn't say, with maybe my membership now over the years who you know, are committed to church and going to church. But it does make it hard for outreach, things like that. When people are always taken off on the weekends, can make it hard to ever get them in your doors. So I think those are probably the two biggest challenges, just the lifestyle here, and then also the cost of living.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like for a resort town, you need to be there's that resort town prices that come with it too.
Yes, absolutely. It is paradise. It's gorgeous. But there are different costs that come with that. Everything's more expensive here, and whether from housing to gasoline to food, those are the kind of things that you sacrifice for to live here. It's a trade-off, right? You can live in this beautiful place, but you have to be willing to pay for it to a certain extent.
That makes sense. The other thing that you talked about was the difficulty in outreach because there's that let's take off in the weekends. Let's talk a little bit more about that and how it relates to being Lutheran in the area.
Yeah, I would say, so when I got here, it's kind of interesting. Our church has always been known for the school. Before I came, the school at one point had been quite large. Between economics and some other issues, it had kind of almost completely gone away. So when I came here, they had just started kindergarten back up. So most people, if they knew anything about the Lutheran church, they just knew we had a school. Like, they don't know what Lutherans believe. Some of the stories I heard from people about what they thought we believed were rather funny when I got here, you know, like some people had even compared it to like witchcraft, you know, it was like, and that's from other Christians. Like, that's the kind of like weird ideas. Like, we were just this outsider. And I still kind of feel that way because we cannot do joint worship services. I cannot do joint youth groups. I can't do some of these things that all the other churches in a small town can do together. It often puts me on the outside of a lot of things, whether it's the ministerial alliance or any of those kind of things. We cannot fit into those things the way all the other churches can. And so that makes it, I think, more challenging in some respects in getting people to even understand who we are and what we're about. They really have to come here and visit and start being a part of what we're doing to really see us for who we are, because we're just not, we can't be a part of that stuff. And in a small, we're in a small conservative town for the most part. It's, there's a lot of churches in this tiny town. I mean, the county has about 15,000 people, and we have Pagosa itself has like 30 some churches, which is quite high for a town that's not massive, you know, and that 15,000, the county spread out. But we have a lot of churches, and we are a rather conservative area. And yet still, because we're Lutheran, because we don't confess the same things they do, does put us on the outside a little bit in some regards. For example, someone had told my wife one year, they were saying, oh, I let my kids visit all these different churches, you know? And my wife was like, well, all those churches believe the same thing. Like we're different than those. Like my kids can't go to all those. For your kids, it's the same place, basically. They're all teaching the same thing. But for my kids, it wouldn't be that way. They'd be teaching much different things, contrary to what we believe. And so we can't really, you know, we can't do that with our kids. It's different for us. And I think that's one area where we've tried hard to let people know what we're about and tried to make things clear, whether it's on our website or, you know, just as a school, making sure people understand what it means that we are a Lutheran school. Because now we have up through seventh grade next year. And so as that's grown up over these past 8.5 years that I've been here, and we've added more grades and have more people from town coming to the school, it gives us the opportunity to kind of let them know, this is what we believe. Your kids are memorizing the small catechism. That's a good summary of our faith. Like, this is really what we're about. We have chapel every day, right? We use basically a form of matins. It's technically from the TLH, updated with LSB language, the opening and closing of a school, which is just a modified form of matins. And so they're doing liturgical worship every day with us, and they're learning Lutheran hymns. You know, this week they're learning when in the hour of deepest need, because it's the hymn of the day for this coming Sunday, for the second Sunday in Lent. And so they're starting more and more, I think, to figure out who we are and what we're about. But it's taken a lot of time, because we're not Baptist, we're not Pentecostal, and that's most of the churches around here outside of the Roman Catholic Church and the Methodist Church. So that puts us in a unique position, but also it's been a lot of work to let people know, here are the differences, here's why they matter, here's why we think it's important for us to not be a part of some of these things that all the rest of the churches are a part of.
Yeah, that makes sense. Say a little bit more. I was a little surprised to hear you refer to it as a conservative town, but I suppose that a resort town is more, the churches are more made up of the people that actually live in the town as opposed to vacationers. Would you say that there's kind of a Christian ethos, even if it's that kind of American Christianity that obviously we would disagree with theologically, but at least there's some sort of Christian ethos in the town?
To a certain extent, yes. In fact, I mean, one of the great things about this town really is the people, and I'm including not just people in my congregation who I think are amazing and love them dearly, but the whole town is really a great community of people who really seem to care for each other and look out for each other. We had some teachers here a couple years ago from Texas, and one of our teachers had a stroke. She's quite young. She had just turned 40. She had a stroke in the middle of the school year.
Oh, my.
It was a really terrible situation. And they saw the way our church and the way the community came together to help that family, and they were blown away, because they're from a bigger town in Texas. And they said, you know, we can't even find people to watch our dog when we go somewhere, when we lived in Texas. And yet here are all these people, like just tons of people outpouring of love to take care of this family here in this small community. And so I think there is that element. I mean, even the homeschooling community, which we're involved in too, because some of my kids are too old for our school. There are a lot of committed Christians. You know, they're godly people who love Jesus dearly and really do, I think, work to make this town a better place. The Western Slope in general is more conservative religiously and politically than like Denver, for example, where most of the votes are there. But once you get to Western Slope, right, we've got lots of ranches out this way. Even though we're a resort town, we have ranchers and things like that. It does have a different vibe to it than, you know, like Denver and Boulder and even Colorado Springs, areas like that. So, yeah, I think there is an element of that still. It's definitely changing in some ways. I mean, just like the rest of the world. But there still is that, I think, overall sense of helping your neighbor, loving each other, looking out for one another, that still exists. I think a large part of that is there are a lot of Christians in this town who, you know, make up the backbone of the town and who are just great people. So I think in that way, we are a little backwards compared to the rest of culture in many ways, but in a very, very good and real sense. It's not phony. I've lived places, you know, where there's a element of hospitality where everyone, you know, is really friendly outwardly. But it doesn't sometimes go beyond the surface level, you know, it's just kind of like,
kind of bless your heart, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't going to say specifically South Carolina, but it, you know, when I live there, people are very, very nice. But I mean, you can talk to someone for 5 minutes and they'll say, hey, you should come over to my house for dinner. But it's just a way of being nice. They don't necessarily really mean they're going to have you over for dinner. Whereas here, maybe it takes people, it's more of a West Coast vibe. It's a little more laid back. So they're not as in your face about that stuff. But there's a genuine love and friendliness that does exist here that is more so than any place else I've ever lived by far. And part of it is it's small, it's a unique place. Once you've stuck it out here and they see that you're going to stay, they really embrace you as their own. And not just like the church people, but the town as well. So, you know, it's different. My house, when we moved in, it still has no central heating. But when I first moved in and was like, how can a house not have central heating? It's, you know, I moved here in 2012. It's 2012. How can a house not have central heating? Like, what world are we living in? But my house is heated by a wood stove mostly. That's like 90% of my heat. That and passive solar, just the sun warming up my house. So, you know, you have to do things like get firewood and, you know, keep it stacked and do things. There's an element here. So a lot of people move here to be very independent and do things on their own. We have neighbors that we know a lot of people that hunt for their meat, and that's their meat for the year. So it is a different lifestyle, different pace here. And but part of what that builds too is a really great community in ways that I haven't seen before. So
that's really cool. Let's take a moment for a word from our sponsor. Folks, if you like podcasts, you will enjoy Audible. It's a service that gives you an audiobook to listen to each month of your choice from a large library. And they want to get you started with a free trial offer that includes an audiobook that you get to keep. So go to lutherancartographer.com/audible to get your free audiobook and start your free trial today. If you're looking for a book to check out, I'd recommend looking at Martin Luther's Table Topics, all sorts of wit, levity, but also good, solid theological insights from Luther as well. Check it out at lutherancartographer.com/audible. Let's get back to the show. Let's talk more about what it's like to raise a family there. You've mentioned your church at school and your involvement in the homeschool community. Say a little bit more about what raising a family is like.
Yeah, so my wife and I, we have seven kids. One of those is in the womb still, so she's not made her appearance yet.
Congratulations.
But I have – thank you. We have five daughters and two boys, and they all love it here. I mean, my kids love living here. I had a call recently to a church in Illinois, and they were heartbroken at the thought of leaving here. They love the outdoor stuff we have here. They just love everything about it. It's a great town to raise children in. It really is, for a lot of the reasons I've already mentioned. But on top of that, we have an option of a classical Lutheran school. I know you recently had pastors on that have talked about classical education, so I don't probably need to say much about that. But we have a classical Lutheran school, preschool through sixth this year, preschool through seventh next year. And then my older children do classical conversations. And a lot of our older kids from our church go to that. So it's also has the feel of the Lutheran school in some ways, because, you know, we've got, I think, seven kids from our church that are in the classical conversations. So they make up a good portion of it here. And then there's just, because it's a slower pace of life, a little more laid back, they're not, I don't know, we don't have a lot of the struggles you have in the city with things like crime is, you know, not very big here at all. outside of drug use, which is pretty prevalent everywhere these days. But we don't have crime issues. You know, we don't worry about them when they go ride their bikes for, you know, all around the neighborhood and everywhere. We don't have to worry about them. We just let them go. You know, they can play in our yard. We have 5 acres. They can play all over our land. They can go down the street. We just don't have to worry about them very much. It's just very freeing. And so between the size of the area, just all the things to do and the people, it's a fantastic place for children. And our church has grown. I mean, we have, I think on an average Sunday right now, we're up to like 30 some kids on a Sunday, which is awesome. When I first got here, it was often just my children that were in church. But over the last 8.5 years, you know, we've added children to our own family. We've added families to the church, or families have come back to church with their kids. And that's just been a real blessing for them to have that community of Lutheran children to be around and to play with, to have over to our house. It's been a huge thing for my family to have that kind of community here in this place, in our church, not just in the town, but in our church itself, with all of these children and families working together, all with the same kind of goals for what we want for our children, what we want for their education, what we'd like to see down the road for them, that they remain faithful and that they find godly spouses and raise families of their own.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Let's go on and talk about what you'd recommend seeing in the area. You've already mentioned the great hiking. If you had a friend coming into town, what things would you highlight for them?
Well, as I mentioned, the hot springs would be one of the first places people like to go. If you're going to come here and you don't go to the hot springs, it's kind of odd just because we're named after it. But there's hiking to various waterfalls. Those are some of my favorite hikes because, I don't know, I didn't grow up in a lot of places where you had a lot of waterfalls. I know up in Washington, you're probably a little more used to hikes with waterfalls and some of those things. But most places I've grown up haven't had the beautiful waterfalls that we have here, whether they're off regular trails or just you going off the beaten path and finding them. There's also, I really recommend, I've done river rafting both here down the San Juan and also in Durango down the Animas. And that's just a great experience to do here. One, it's probably colder than anywhere else you've done river rafting, because you do river rafting off the snow melt, essentially. I mean, so it's, you're doing it, you want to do it at the end of May, beginning of June, when the water is highest, and it's rather chilly, but it's quite a great experience for people. There's also, we have not too far from here, a lot of people like the cliff dwellings of the Pueblo Indians, Mesa Verde. It's not too far from here. We also have Chimney Rock, which is similar. It has some of the archaeological stuff from Native Americans there as well that people love. So, I mean, if somebody comes here and they say, what should I see? I usually have to ask, well, what kind of things do you like to do outdoors? And then direct them based on that, because there's just so much to see and do. You can't take it all in. But I enjoy the hiking and the river rafting are two of my favorite things around here to do. And those are, you come here in the summer and that's one of the things you'll see. The river is just full of people rafting down it, just constant stream of people coming down it. And it's just a lot of fun. So.
Great. Any restaurants that are in town that you'd recommend?
Yeah, it's one of my wife and I's favorite restaurants is actually the Thai restaurant, which is kind of odd. I had a pastor friend who came through here one time and he and his son stopped there and he messaged me. He's like, that's one of the best Thai food I've ever had. I said, how do you have that in Pagosa? And I said, well, the family's from Thailand and they go back every year. They buy a bunch of stuff, bring it back. So that's a really great place. We have several breweries actually. I mean, one of the advantages of being in a resort town is you have more restaurants than you would for a town our size. And so we have several breweries that are quite good. Pagosa Brewing, Riff Raff Brewing. We have a great pizza place in Rosie's Pizza. We have, my wife and I love Chivolo's Mexican restaurant. So I mean, if you can think of it, we probably have it here just because of the size. I have members that own restaurants that are wonderful. We have Smoke and Mo's Barbecue, which is a great barbecue place here in town, run by one of my members. And also my wife and I just went to lunch today to Cafe Colorado, which is really well known for their breakfasts. And so there's a lot to choose from, even though we're a small town, just because of the tourism industry keeps a lot of restaurants open, which we're very thankful for.
Absolutely. Let's turn to current events. What has Colorado's response to the coronavirus been like, and has it affected your congregation very much?
That's a great question. We'll see if my governor listens to this. So at first, when everything's first happening, they first shut everything down. We went to services of 10 or fewer. And so I was doing about 10 to 12 services a weekend. I did that for quite a while. And then around, and we did a modified full service. I preached and I did communion, but we just shortened them so that we could have, you know, the number we did over Friday night, Saturday morning, and Sunday until we got through everyone that wanted to come. And so we did that for a while, and then the governor started ignoring the churches and what we were telling him, what we were asking. And so around Pentecost of last year, I basically started ignoring what was said out of the governor's office because it was often contradictory. It wasn't the same for churches as it was for other places. And so we started having two services. The first service was for those who were uncomfortable being around people, so wanted some space to spread out, could be distanced from others. And then our second service was just completely normal. Everyone just comes. And part of that, too, part of my reasoning behind that, I know everyone's had to make their own decisions on this stuff. Part of my reason behind that was all the families that were coming to second service were all involved in each other's lives anyways. We're all hanging out in various aspects anyway. So to say, well, you can hang out, you're all going to hang out anyway, but you can't come together in church, to me, was the height of foolishness. Like, yeah, you can all hang out, and we're all going to hang out in different ways, but we're not going to come to church together seemed rather foolish. And so that service has been running completely normal. There's been nothing, I haven't done anything different at that service, not one thing. Whereas the first service, they try to be spread out, and some of them wear masks, some don't. We do a couple of different things to try to accommodate people at that service. The second service is 100% normal. People can wear a mask if they want, but generally no one does at that service. They don't really distance in any way. And I know some people think maybe we're foolish or being careless with that, but everyone in that group has kind of made the decision that, one, they want to be together, and two, they want to have normal church services. They want to see each other's faces. They want to sing without a mask on. They want to receive communion as they've always received communion. And they know the risks. It's not that they don't know the risks. They're just don't believe the risks are outweigh the benefit of having church that way. And so we've been doing that since Pentecost of last year. Almost a year now at this point, I guess, we've been doing it that way. So the state hasn't been great on it in many regards. We have a Democrat governor who seems to have drawn some things out. I feel especially bad for businesses in our town who I feel like have been penalized. Even still today in our county, there's only 600 and I think about 50 cases, which is less than 5% of our county. At least recorded cases. I know there's probably more cases than that, but a lot of businesses took the brunt of these decisions. And so, I wanted a place where all of these people could come who were suffering from various parts of it, where they could come and just have a sense of normal life together as a church. And so we've worked very hard to have it. Our school's been normal since September. Last spring we closed down because like everyone else, we didn't know what was going on, and we closed our doors and went to online learning. But this year, since September, we've been open. We haven't closed once. Some kids have had to quarantine off and on, but we've had in-person school 5 days a week since September without any issues. So God has been very gracious and good. And it's been great for the kids. You know, they can come and just be, there's nothing unusual about it. They're not put in little boxes of plexiglass. They play together. They eat together. They hang out together. It's basically a normal school year. The only difference is they get a temperature check on their way in. Other than that, everything's been normal for them, which I'm very thankful for as well. We worked very hard to make sure they could have a normal school year this year. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's fantastic that you offer, a refuge from the dystopia to your congregation and to your kids. As we start closing out the podcast, I want to make sure that I give you the opportunity to point our listeners wherever you'd like, your church's website, places to follow you online, where would you like to point our listeners?
We do have a website. It probably needs to be updated, you know, as many church websites, but I try to keep it fairly up to date. But oslcpagosa.org. I don't have a huge online presence. I used to do more things, but the last couple of years I've had to scale back. So I'm basically on Facebook, just Andrew Packer. You can find me on there. Other than that, I don't really have anything. All the links to anything else we do as a church are on the church's website. So I have a blog there that I haven't updated in quite a while. I was doing it quite a lot during the pandemic, beginning of the pandemic, because I was doing devotions every day for, I think, the first 12 weeks or so of the pandemic. But then after we got back to normal, I kind of stopped doing that and directed them to other devotions because I said, look, there's no reason for me to reinvent the wheel. There's better stuff out there than what I'm doing for you that you can find for daily devotions. And so here's where I recommend you go and look for this stuff. And part of that too, I think by the end of like the 12 weeks, I was pretty worn out from, you know, doing it every day for so long. But, so yeah, any of that stuff is all on our church's website.
Okay, great. Dear listener, you can find links to all that stuff that Pastor Packer just mentioned, as well as his recommendations for things to check out at the show notes page. That'll be lutherancartographer.com/62. Pastor Packer, thank you so much for your time today. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners?
You know, it's interesting. You had talked beforehand, before we started the interview, about why you started this to connect with Lutherans and see what's going on. And I think it's a really worthy thing. And I hope as people listen to these things, they realize that they're not alone, that their church is not alone, that there are a lot of faithful congregations throughout the country who are striving to be confessional Lutheran churches, to be light in the midst of darkness, and that wherever they're at, if they're not near one, move to be close to one, wherever that may be. And if you are in one, then support it. Support its work. Encourage the people there. And as you have opportunity online, you know, online social media can be a real bane and curse on mankind. But things like this and other groups online or just connecting with Lutherans throughout the world is a great blessing. So encourage one another with these kind of things that they're not alone. Because I think a lot of people often feel like they're very alone in the midst of all that's going on. And I think that's part of what our handlers would like, is for us to kind of feel broken and feel like we're alone and that there aren't other people like us out there. So I hope they're encouraged by things like this, that there are other Lutherans, there are other confessional Lutherans who are confessing the same things in a very different part of the country, but still all confessing the same faith together, no matter where we're at. So I hope this encourages them, and that your work continues to bless people as you point out these things to them.
Thank you. Thank you again. God's peace.
Yeah. Thank you. You as well.
Thanks for listening to The Lutheran Cartographer. For more about the things that we talked about today, check out the show notes page. It'll be at lutherancartographer.com/62. I want to remind you about that Audible offer. It's that opportunity to get that free audiobook of your choice. You can do that by going to lutherancartographer.com/audible. Be sure you subscribe to the show on Stitcher or on iTunes or on your podcast app. That way you don't miss an episode. And until next time, I'm Nicholas Weber. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon.